Welcome to Security Squad, a SirSecurity.com podcast for December 2012, our year-end wrap-up. Hi, I'm Rob Westervelt, the news director of CertSecurity.com, and joining me in the studio is Eric Perizzo. Eric is senior site editor of CertSecurity.com. How's it going, Eric?
It's going well, Rob. How are you?
Not bad. It's been a heck of a year. We started with some data breaches. We've had a lot of talk about cyber warfare, proactive security, so I think we have a lot to talk about.
No shortage of storylines this year. Certainly lots going on. Been an exciting year. Been a lot of news. Certainly a lot of tough events for a variety of businesses and organizations for a variety of reasons, but at the same time, I think there's a renewed focus among enterprises for information security. There's a growing realization of how important it is. More companies are building it into their business processes and allowing room in the C-suite for the CISOs to have influence over business processes. So overall, I while there's certainly, you know, some tragedy, there's also some progress as well.
Yeah, there's certainly been a lot of data breaches this year, a lot of password breaches. The first one that comes to mind is the LinkedIn breach, which had a cascading effect. It really, I think, highlighted the connection between all of these e-commerce vendors and these social networks, because individuals use their passwords on the same password on so many different sites. So even though the breach affected LinkedIn, folks like Facebook and Amazon.com and just on and on and on, the IT teams had to respond in some way.
Yeah, it's an interesting development there. And it's not a storyline that was talked a lot about, but it certainly is very important. You know, some years ago, when the proliferation of passwords first came into the into the societal conversation, I think people thought that it was okay to use the same password on multiple services. The password was just something you had to have. Even some security experts advised, you know, you only need a few different passwords. You know, you can reuse some of them. Right. I mean, seriously, 6-7 years ago, you saw that advice out there. But now that attackers are so much more sophisticated than they ever were before, clearly every user needs a unique password for every service they use. Obviously, a lot of complexity there. You know, organizationally, it certainly preaches the importance of single sign-on, where you have integrated systems that all rely on a single, you know, credential store, so that, you know, it's easier for users. But for users themselves, for consumers, individuals, it certainly doesn't offer a whole lot of relief to the complexity of managing all these passwords. There are tools out there that do it. I use one. There are others. I don't feel like any of them are all that great. The need for a better system of authentication is out there, but I think we're some years away from really finding it.
And if you're running a website, you know, you're doing a disservice if you are not protecting your user information in some way, your user passwords in some way. In LinkedIn's case, they were hashing passwords, but they were not salting them, making it much easier to crack them.
And that's an ongoing problem too, where organizations don't realize how important every step in the process is. You can't do security half-heartedly. You really need the due diligence to follow best practices to the letter. And if not, then you're going to get burned, as we saw with so many of the data breaches this year, where it was a matter of a single failure in, you know, a multi-step security program. That one small thing is what ultimately enabled a breach to happen in so many cases. And
the password management tools out there, I mean, the people who are security-minded probably use these more so than the average individual end user. If I was a CISO at an organization, I would highlight these to my end users, that to start using some of these password management programs.
It's an interesting issue in that it doesn't, at least in my mind, technically fall into the purview of what you would consider an IT security problem, in that it's, you know, you have people who go to the office and use your systems, and you need to keep those secure, and you need to secure that data, but it's not your job to help people secure their Facebook or their Yahoo email or whatever. As is often the case in many organizations that don't have an integrated authentication infrastructure, you have people who have a myriad of different username and password credentials for a variety of company systems. And just keeping track of that information is a challenge on an ongoing basis. Is it an issue that needs more attention? Yes, but it's a really complicated one just to convey and understand what the problem is.
Yeah, and at the beginning of 2012, in a previous podcast, I mentioned that I thought that we would see in 2012 some password alternatives emerge. And there, in fact, were a couple of companies that did emerge, but they've yet to really gain any traction. So, you know, moving forward, I think we might see that in 2013. And this issue of complexity does come in here. And this is the reason why they haven't been able to gain traction, because it's something that you can't just present a new technology and say, oh, let's use it. You need to have buy-in from so many different places, the e-commerce community and the end users that need to adopt it, and on and on and on. And it's something that takes a lot of time.
I think you have to give some credit to the financial services companies, the banks that are out there, because even a lot of the smaller community banks now, in addition to the larger multinationals, have integrated multi-factor authentication systems for their web-based logins. So it's reaching the point where more and more consumers are used to that process. They understand what it is, how it works, and to some extent why it's important, why they have to do it. So as an extension of that, we recently saw, you know, Google's added, you know, a second factor authentication to its email system, you know, as an optional authentication factor, where, you know, they'll send the PIN to your phone, and you have to put that in addition to your
PayPal, I think, does that
password
now.
Right. So you're seeing it more and more, and I think that's the model we're going to see more organization, more you know, vendors, websites, etc., start to adopt, because people are used to it. That said, it still doesn't work all that well. For instance, I am pissed off at my bank right now because they recently just implemented a multi-factor authentication system without properly informing me. So it didn't really work right. And it's now preventing me from downloading my transactions, which I need to, you know, do my banking. So you have to make sure that these systems work well enough so that the user interaction doesn't suffer, but also adds that layer of security, and it's a tough balancing act.
Yeah, I'm glad you just mentioned that, because the rollout of these systems is very important, and I'm in the middle of putting together a package on data loss prevention technology, and this comes up with a lot of various technologies, not just DLP, but a lot of companies try to just roll out a new technology immediately across the entire enterprise, and they don't take a systematic approach to it, and that's where they get tripped up. They try to go all out instead of systematically rolling it out in small doses, and then fine tuning as you go along, and then eventually the entire corporate network is protected in some way.
One of our great contributors, Ernie Hayden, wrote a piece for us a while back about the process of rolling out a new security system or a change in security processes. And one of the best pieces of advice that I don't think many organizations do is to kind of have a super user group, if you will, of people who are interested in security. And it can be, you know, in some cases it's going to be easier to just, you know, pick a certain department and have everyone from that department participate. But in a lot of instances, it's going to be individuals from various groups that represent a cross-section of the company who just, for one reason or another, you know, find security stuff interesting. So pulling that group in and having a way to discuss changes with them, you know, roll out systems and processes to them first, if you can, helps so much, because if you can't sell a system or change or what have you to that group, you have no chance of selling it to a broader organization at large. So I thought that was a great piece of advice and something that I hope organizations out there try to do.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, that almost leads into end-user training to a certain extent. And I was at a pen testing conference where this came up. The conference was full of young pen testers that loved what they did, and they were excited about eventually running a security program at an organization somewhere. That was their goal in life. I mean, they loved what they did. But one of the main messages, in order to do security training properly, a good way is to make it personal to them. Rather than doing a session on how to encrypt Social Security numbers using the system that's in place at the at the organization, do a session on how to protect your kids on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Do a session, on how to properly protect your banking credentials. Make it personal for the end user. And then eventually, once they begin to pick up a better understanding of how to secure themselves, they will be security conscious with the company data.
Fantastic advice. And you cannot underestimate the importance of finding innovative ways like that to foster the culture and importance of information security in the individuals who work in your organization. Because to your point, how often have we seen security incidents, breaches, what have you, caused by users who make bad decisions? I mean, for years and years and years, and still to this day, the number one way that breaches happen, malware infections occur, is through phishing, and now spear phishing even more often.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a matter of users clicking links in emails from untrusted sources. And it just happens over and over and over again.
That's right. And social engineering is a component in almost every single documented data breach that we've seen. So I know you have a running list of some high-profile data breaches that we can take some lessons from over 2012. Do you want to go down that list a little bit?
This year, in 2012, we certainly saw the comeback of the data breach. And here's just the brief chronological list that I put together of the major breaches over the course of the year. So for anyone listening, this is going to take a minute, but I think it's worthwhile just to convey the scope and seriousness of breaches that's still occurring. So going back to January, you had the Norton source code breach. That's where they realized that, oh, by the way, our source code was breached back in 2006, and we don't really know exactly how much was breached, and we really never did get a whole lot of information about that. So if you're a Symantec customer, I you might want to look into that if you haven't already. City College of San Francisco, that was another interesting one, in that they somehow discovered that they had been breached for a period of 10 years, and they were just finding out about it, apparently. Malware was pervasive across their computer labs and their entire
network. University
environments
are very difficult to protect because they're so open. We know that.
Someone apparently finally realized that maybe they should do some scans on outbound traffic and see what was going on. Good plan there. Zappos, the shoe retailer online, 24 million customers breached. That was also in January.
That goes along with the password user information, protecting that properly.
Same bucket there as what we talked about a moment ago. VeriSign, also, this was in February. Multiple hacks they discovered. Nortel.
The VeriSign thing, I think, came from an SEC filing. I think that
they didn't actually disclose it themselves.
Right.
It was disclosed through
They were required to. That was part of the new rule.
Right. They didn't come out and say specifically to customers, oh, hey, by the way, we had a data breach.
Yeah.
It was, they just put it in this document that was then obviously discovered.
Right.
But Nortel in February, they discovered that they had been breached over the course of several years. Unclear exactly what was discovered. Sony, after its massive PlayStation Network breach / takedown, was breached again. This time they had Michael Jackson's entire back catalog stolen, all of his songs, including unreleased ones. Global Payments, also in March, 7 million card numbers breached. That was a pretty big one.
Mm.
Utah Medicaid system, 800,000 breached. UK military, its entire web infrastructure breached. State of Utah, a million people's personal data breach. That was in May. The LinkedIn / eHarmony situation, which we talked about in June. Yahoo had 450,000 usernames and passwords breached in July. Dropbox, after its big hacking incident, was hacked again and had customer contact data stolen, which they discovered when their users started getting spam. We had the Apple Blue Toad Universal Device ID hack that involved Blue Toad, Apple's kind of application development partner, breach, being breached to the result of 12 million unique device IDs being lost. Adobe had its code signing system breached. That was a pretty disastrous one, in that attackers figured out how to breach the system in such a way that they could use it to sign their malicious applications, so they looked like legitimate Adobe applications.
Nice.
A lot of creativity there. I do kind of have some respect for that, as awful as that was. That was a really creative, really creative way to go about it. IEEE, 100,000 member credentials in plain text exposed on the web for a month. And then, you know, arguably the biggest one of them all, which happened most recently in October, the South Carolina data breach that involved at least 3.6 million social security numbers. So, you know, you could have a breach for every day of the year, but that's a sampling of the big ones we saw this year. And a lot of the same themes emerge that we've seen in years past, that it's not about any real sophisticated security techniques. You don't need to go out and spend $1 million. You just need to make sure you have the due diligence taken care of. You need to make sure you encrypt hard drives and databases and restrict access. You need to make sure that, you know, you don't provide administrator access on endpoints, especially, you know, Windows systems, if you don't need to. Check applications against the OWASP top 10. You know, how many SQL injections did we see this year? And that goes on and on and on year after year. And then monitoring outbound network traffic. Finally, phishing, user awareness, it's all tied together. But
and if you haven't had a chance to read the report on the South Carolina breach, you should. The report really outlines, it starts with a social engineering attack and a set of valid account credentials that this attacker used to get into the system. So no matter how much monitoring was in place, no matter how many security technologies were in place, it doesn't matter, because this attacker mm-hmm. was able to get right in and looked like any other user.
We've talked about it a bunch of times before, but you're exactly right, Rob. If someone, an attacker, has a valid set of credentials, they're going to be able to log in and do whatever they want, take whatever they want in a lot of cases, and it's going to be weeks or months if you ever know exactly when it happened and, mm-hmm. and what happened. It's so hard to detect an attack that is rooted in legitimate logic.
And with that, we're going to wrap it up. That does it for this edition of Security Squad. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. From Eric Parizeau, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.